The Lost Souls of Angel Kov is the latest historical fiction by Linda Holman. It's based in Russia after the 1861 Emancipation Manifesto, when serfdom was abolished by Alexander II. Now, the book opens with a landowner's son being stolen for ransom, and then how his mom, a countess, tries to get him back. And Linda joins me now on the line. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
So what's the family connection here in this story?
My family? My grandparents were from Russia. And there were stories that were told to me that shocked and fascinated me as a child. And some I never forgot, and I picked up on those when I started writing this book, when I decided I wanted to write a book set in Russia.
And what specifically was that? It had to do also with, was it your grandmother's brother being stolen?
Yes. My grandmother's brother was just kind of picked up outside in their village off the street and stolen away by men on horseback. And they never saw him again. And as I grew up hearing that story, which my grandmother told in a rather unemotional tone since it had happened many years ago for her and so many things had happened to her, I could not lose that memory. So that was one of them that certainly was the genesis of this book for me.
Do you know who they were taken by? Did they ever figure that out?
She didn't know. She, you know, she was a child at the time, and it was a very rough life. She, as I say, she was a village peasant. In her family, 12 children were born, and only 4 survived infancy. So, you know, her memories of growing up are rather sketchy. And she said to me, "Oh, I think they were Cossacks, or I think they were Tatars." And so she just had different, you know, thoughts as an older woman of who they may have been. But he wasn't the only child stolen. There were others. So, you know, recruiting child soldiers, I don't really know.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you're talking about the time of 1861, Emancipation Manifesto, you know, when serfdom was abolished,
yes.
Before that came about, what was life like in Russia?
Well, before it came about was fairly the same as after the emancipation, because for the poor serfs, basically it was the words, "You are now free," which really meant nothing to their lives of poverty. So before that, the country was run, you know, 80% of the country were serfs, and they were owned basically by the noblemen and aristocracy, and the serfs ran the land and their, you know, the bigger estates and things like that for the richer people. And once the manifesto was set out and this was abolished, serfdom was abolished, the serfs really had nowhere else to go. They had no money. They had no land. They basically stayed on the land and continued working. And that's when the first kind of communal situation sprung up, because they decided to pull together and, you know, harvest the land and work for themselves and each other. So, yeah, it changed. It didn't really change. It changed in that they were free, but they couldn't leave anyway.
They were still poor.
They were.
How did this emancipation movement come about? I mean, why were the politicians, why was the Tsar at the time so willing to allow this kind of reform?
Right. It had started much earlier, actually. It started, the first movements were started in 1825 with men called the Decembrists, who were in the military, who had gone into different parts of Europe and seen life there, and came back to Russia and felt that they were being held back by this kind of political situation, and struggled for freedom, but they were actually punished and, you know, sent to Siberia and things for their roles in the uprisings trying to free the serfs. And eventually Tsar Alexander II said, you know, there is so much unrest and rebellion is going to come from underneath, so I will stop the underneath rumblings by going from the top and saying, I will now give my decree that everyone is free. So that's what he was attempting to do, but of course there was much unrest anyway because of what I just talked about in terms of the serfs, the former serfs, saying, well, wait a minute, what does this do for us? We're no better off. So there was a lot of kind of revolutionary activities without a real revolution.
How key was this movement in Russia's history? You know, what followed in the next century, the Soviet era, communism?
Mm-hmm. Well, as I said, a lot of the serfs created these their own little commune, what you would call communes, meaning they were in the village, but they all worked for the good of the village, and that, I think that was the beginning of socialism, where they were, you know, kind of working in this way. They still had the strong religion, which was, you know, came to be discouraged later, of course. But I think it was just the beginning of a whole socialist and then communist movement.
Mm-hmm. Now, I guess at that time, you know, mid-18th century, it would have sort of been the time of your great-great-grandparents or so. Do you know your family history from around that time? Have you tried to find
out? Not really. Apart from my own grandparents, my grandmother was born in Odessa, which was around, or near Odessa, which was then, is now Ukraine, but was then Russia. And, you know, she, as I say, she had a very hard upbringing. She came as a 15-year-old to Ellis Island. She didn't really carry too many stories that she wanted to talk about, and she came by herself and lived with an aunt. And then my grandfather was from St. Petersburg, and his story is one that I actually brought into the book as well. When he was inducted into the Army as a young man, he decided that that wasn't for him, and he walked away from the Army, and he walked all the way to Paris because he couldn't stay in St. Petersburg without being caught. And he had an aunt in Paris, so he walked all the way there, and from there he got to the United States. And I talk about one of my characters first rides and then walks out of Siberia. I was kind of thinking of my grandfather's story at that point. Again, I only know my grandparents' story. There's very little history recorded or was even spoken about of their parents. So it kind of stopped, you know, with my grandparents.
You've written several historical fiction books now, considering, you know, that there's a bit of a family connection in this history here. Was it different for you this time around writing this book?
Yeah, I would say so, because the other four I've written prior, I had no knowledge of those lives. This was really intriguing for me because I'd gone to Russia in 2007. I have no relatives that I know of left there, but I just went on a trip there to kind of experience the country. And there was a kind of romanticism in it to be there and think of especially my grandfather living in the streets of St. Petersburg. And his father had worked in the Mariinsky Theater and had installed the first gas lights in the Winter Palace. So as I walked through those places, I felt I was really intrigued by that. Then I went back in 2010 during the work of the book, working on the book, and rode the Trans-Siberian across Siberia and into Russia. And so I did feel a connection. It was definitely a different feeling that I really enjoyed, of knowing that I was writing the history of part of my own family.
Linda, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you very much, Justine.